This is Corolla Digital. Recorded live at Corolla One Studios with Adam Carolla and board-certified physician and addiction medicine specialist, Dr. Drew Pinsky. You're listening to The Adam and Dr. Drew Show.
Get it on. Got to get it on. No choice but to get it on. Mandate, get it on. Thank you for tuning in. Once again, we do appreciate it. And if you want to support us, well, it's easy. You can just click through the Amazon link at www.adamanddrdrewshow.com. And also, if you'd like to donate to the show, I said $2 a month. I may raise that to $5 a month, Drew, because I realize not everyone will do $2 a month.
If everyone pulled their weight.
Right, but half of you won't do it. So now the other half, just like our society, is going to have to step up, carry those 47%
of you. Keep the pirate ship a-sailing.
That's right. You can support us by clicking on the PayPal button on our site. And again, let us help you and help us. Dear, 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 dear old friend Sean Green here. Sean played for the Dodgers for many years. I'm also has a book out, and I'm also looking, and I'll get into the book in a second, something that's incredibly impressive. May 23rd, 2002, hit 4 home runs in one game, which has to put you in some sort of club that is pretty small.
Yeah, I was the 13th guy, and then there's 2 other guys since. My good friend that I played 10 years with, Carlos Delgado, up in Toronto. He did it a year after I did it, and then last May, Josh Hamilton, who's now with the Angels, did it with Texas.
And Sean did it in sort of the steroid era, not taking steroids.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying,
unbelievable.
He looked just like this playing baseball.
The baseball record that seems like it will never be broken. And I think it took place at Dodger Stadium. It could have been Angel Stadium. It was out here. It was probably about 10 years ago, and we'll have to look it up. Somebody hit 2 grand slams in one inning, I do believe.
Yeah, I think that was someone with St. Louis, Fernando Tatis.
Yes. Can you imagine the statistical odds? Well, first off, getting up twice in an inning, statistically pretty low.
With the bases loaded now. Twice.
Well, I'm working.
Yeah, okay.
Don't do that thing. Don't do that thing. Getting up twice in an inning, pretty low statistically. Hitting 2 home runs. You're 2 times at bat, statistically, really low. And then having the bases loaded each time is, I don't know how many million to one, but who else? I mean, I know everything gets broken. First off, nothing will get broken. It can only be tied. You can't get up 3 times in an inning and hit 3 grand slams, can you? But no. Is this ever going to happen again? Sean?
I mean, no, I don't think so. I think there's more of a chance if you do get up twice and you have the bases loaded, you have a better chance of getting a pitch to hit because there's nowhere to put you on the bases. They're not going to walk you. So
interesting.
You have a better chance to get a pitch to hit. But, yeah, I mean, it's statistically almost impossible to have it happen again.
And 4 in a game, by the way, what he doesn't talk about, also 4 pop-outs. He got
right.
up 8 times.
Same game.
He grounded back to the pitcher 4 times, and he underhanded it to the first baseman. Oh, one time he just walked it over the first base. But anyway, let's focus on those home runs. The book, The Way of Baseball, Finding Stillness at 95 Miles an Hour. Talk about it, Sean.
So basically, it talks about early in my career, I played for a manager who didn't like me. I was kind of caught between the GM and the manager. And he had just won a couple World Series with the Blue Jays and didn't want younger players coming up. So anyway, a few years in, they banned me from the batting cage because they were trying to change my style of hitting to a pull hitter.
Hang on a second. Is that not crazy?
Banned from the batting cage.
Banned from the cage.
Because he wanted to practice his – no, we'll have none of that.
Well, what they were saying, I'm assuming, is we don't want you doing – we don't want your swing the way you're swinging
it. Right.
So you're banned until you swing it the way we want to swing it.
Well, they used to make me do all these drills that were screwing me up, and I knew it. Kind of in the old, the 70s era where they played, it was more of kind of the macho, they'd make comments like, oh, if I was playing today, I'd use my dick to hit this guy. And, you're never late on a 2-0 fastball, that's pull and try to – it's a very macho game. Whereas it changed, pitchers start throwing all kinds of different pitches and different counts. And, a lot of the hitters use the whole field more in any way. So they saw me physically as a guy who could hit a lot of home runs, and they said the only way you're going to do it is if you become a pull hitter. So I used to sneak to the cage when they weren't around and try to get the work I wanted in, because I didn't want to do their drills.
And did they want to become a pull hitter? Do you close your stance, open your stance? Like, what do you do to physically start pulling the ball?
You really just use your top hand more and kind of roll it over sooner. And, you know, just try. But what it does, it makes you really one-dimensional. You're really susceptible to other pitches, and you become very pitchable. So I was more along the lines of trying to be, you know, just a guy who can get a lot of hits, use the whole field. So anyway, once they caught me sneaking in the cage, he banned me from the cage. And then I, you know, I was trying to get traded. I was on the bench. So I grabbed my batting tee. And I just hit, there's like a little net in between the dugout and the clubhouse to get loose, you know, before, like when Kirk Gibson.
Back in the side.
Inside yeah, like yeah. There's a tunnel. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it's like when Kirk Gibson hit his mm-hmm. home run in the World Series, he was warming up in this, you know, for the Dodgers version yeah. of this little yeah. net because yeah. you don't mm-hmm. have time to run all the way from the cage, you know, when right. they call you up. So I just started hitting off the tee all the time. And I had kind of worked on, you know, some martial art meditation type things. And over time, I started to incorporate this and just being more purposeful in my practice of hitting off the tee. And that's when my career changed. And once I got back in the lineup, I took off and went from being, you know, a solid player to being, you know, an all-star.
Two-time all-star. Does it's weird, but you tell me, and I think we could all use a version of this in life, which is I'm doing this driving thing, and I've been through the drive. I'm doing the Toyota Celebrity Race, and I've been through it 3 times. And this is my 4th time going back to this driving school. And they said, well, now you don't want to go on Thursday because that's first day, and everyone's just sitting there in the classroom. The guy's going, here's a steering wheel. This is an apex. This is an exit. You've been through it the whole time. And then you go out in the track, but you go with an instructor and you drive slowly, and you've been through all that part. And I had travel on the weekend, and I had to go to that part. I couldn't. But I also, as I was driving out to the Mojave Desert, I was thinking to myself, listen, this is better. It's good to tune it down, get back to the basics and the fundamentals. We ignore that. Once you get through the fundamentals, you go, oh, man, I'm just going to haul ass, man. And then you start losing technique, and eventually you stop your growth. Like, it is good to get pushed back and onto the tee, maybe, yeah, as it were.
Well, exactly. And it's the same when you're a carpenter, I'm sure. You know, the reason people are good at what they do is because they put the same amount of focus and attention in the most, you know, menial part of their job. And then that turns into being really good at that. And that, and you become really good at the bigger things. So I changed my focus to really, instead of just going off the batting tee like other guys, just getting loose, you know, getting through the motions, I just said, you know, this is the most important part of my day, and then that's when everything else got better.
It makes, for those of you who have jobs that you're not in love with, and that's many, many of you, it makes it easier to tolerate your job. When I was a carpenter, I never wanted to be a carpenter. I wanted to do comedy, but I was a carpenter. But at a certain point, I made peace with the fact that I was doing carpentry, where I said, look, this is what you do, 8-10 hours a day, every single day. And you can be miserable and be complaining about it and sort of half-ass it, or you can try to do it as best and efficiently as you can. And it sort of made it much more tolerable, even though it wasn't what I wanted to do. I was doing it in a way that was positive.
It's something that has – probably in your book, it's something that's been said a million times, which is, you know, pride and focus and make the best of whatever you're doing. If you're digging ditches,
right,
find some way to do it, like, be the best.
Something that drives me nuts, and I go to Chipotle. I love Chipotle. But I get so pissed off. The lady who just folds the burrito, she's always fucking up the thing, and the meat's hanging out.
Right.
She has one job. She doesn't even have to put the meat on the burrito or on the tortilla, or she doesn't have to do the salsa. She just has to fold.
Right.
And so my thing is, can you please fold? I don't want a double burrito. It's too much,
right,
you know. So just fold it right. That's all you got to do. And
have you spoken up at the Chipotle?
Yeah, I'm tempted.
I know that would go down.
I bitch about it, but I'm very close.
Take Adam with you when it happens. Let him do it.
Here's the thing. There is a zen in sort of taking very simple tasks and doing them correctly.
Motorcycle maintenance. That's the idea of that book. You're taking something simple and just focusing and doing it.
Yeah, I think a lot of people think of it as kind of, you know, people sitting on top of a mountain chanting. It's really just about doing one thing at a time, focusing your attention on that. And, you know, you do that throughout your life. You're not as stressed out about, you know, what am I going to do later? It's what I'm doing now.
But it's a mindset of doing everything you can the best you can. And I went to school with a bunch of losers who basically their approach was, well, yeah, I'm a horrible student, but that's because you're not paying me $10 an hour to be a student. If you paid me, I'd be a great student. So they sort of deluded themselves into thinking, no, when I get a job, then I get paid, then you got an A student. Well, no, they took the same sort of haphazard approach to life into their job world. And you really either do things right or you don't do things right. It's not like I do this, which I like right, and this, which I don't like. It's in a sloppy, haphazard way. It's more that you get into a habit of doing things correctly. And I wish that was preached a little bit more, because the woman who works at the Chipotle making the burritos, everyone would defend her by going, well, what would you do if you had to stand there all day long and fold tortillas? I'd go, I'd do as fucking best I could. And hopefully someone would notice and I'd get bumped up to the churro stand. Or you know what I mean? Whatever the next move.
Sour cream.
Whatever the next move. I'd work the sour cream gun.
Yeah, well, yeah. Maybe someone noticed.
Yes. So the book, by the way, available on Amazon, and you can click through Adam and DrDrewsShow.com and show us a little love and make everyone happy. Sean, you seem to be, first off, smart with your money, because I noticed you're driving a Tesla S, or at least I noticed it last time I saw you out here when stupid Dr. Drew...
Well, that's,
let's recreate
yes,
what
that's,
happened.
That's why Sean is here, to revisit that moment.
That's the only reason I'm here, huh?
Well, not the only reason, but that is a compelling, compelling piece of the Sean Green story.
Got it.
All right. So, Drew, set the stage.
Sean, help me out here. So, Sean and I did a show, my podcast, Dr.com. Check it out. Episode
20-something.
Gary's going to look it up for me.
All right.
Thanks for having that ready. If I were Adam, I'd give you shit about it.
No, I wouldn't.
Yes, you would.
You fucking point at someone and go, what episode number did I do 3 weeks ago? Please. Yeah. Good.
Chris, why are you laughing? Episode number?
32.
32. Thank you very much. And afterwards, Sean and I were, you know, talking, chatting, walking out towards the parking lot, and there's Mr. Carolla. And Sean stood there.
Sitting on the sofa.
Sitting on the sofa. And
Sean's
I said,
a tall, good-looking drink of water.
Appreciate that.
I think I said, Adam, remember who this is?
No.
I said.
You said, Adam, you remember this guy.
Okay. You remember this guy.
That's
and
right.
And Sean, what did you experience?
Well, you know, I was a big fan. I was a big fan of Adam and you. I listened to Loveline when I was driving home from Dodger Stadium. So, you know, I didn't expect him to remember.
But mind you, we had met you at the Hollywood All-Star Game.
Yeah, 2001.
I was experiencing through
you were in
my
a Dodger uniform.
Narcissistic perspective. He was in a Dodger uniform. So were we. What are
right.
you picking at me
I
for?
I got a piece of lint on
Thank
sure.
you. And
so were we.
Yeah, we were. We were in the crazy Dodger office.
Well, what if he was hiding in a barrel? And so were we.
Just setting the scene.
Well, okay. For me, the only people I really expect to recognize me, and sometimes they still don't, I'll be driving, I'll see a big, you know, Dodger bumper stickers on their car, kind of drive by, you know, hoping that maybe, you know, I get a little flash of my former fame, but, you know, most of the time it's out of context.
So, and he is famous in our household because he was my son's favorite player. They have a,
right.
I understand, it's my narcissistic perspective. There right. we are in our lovely uniform.
Me and Drew. Nice.
Oh, Jesus. Right. And I have a picture in my house of my kids with Sean and
your house,
my house. It was right. I'm saying my narcissistic fucked up perspective.
Thank you.
So I entered the frame with Mr. Carolla with Sean with that mindset.
Sure,
fucked up. Right. Admittedly so.
Right.
And what did Adam do, Sean?
He just jumped all over your shit. Really, is what he did, and it was entertaining. He said, "Don't mind." He's like, "This isn't directed at you," and then he just
yeah. He said, "Hold on,
you.
Whoever you are, let right. me just start screaming
right.
at Drew."
Right.
Why would you do that, Drew?
Because I thought you and I had revisited our how much we like Sean and how that meeting several times over the years. I swear to God, had we not talked about meeting Gonzalez just a couple of weeks before that?
We couldn't think of his name.
I understand, but that day we were discussing and remembering.
But Sean Green's name didn't come up that day.
I don't think it did either, but the day
right.
came
you
up.
You make a very valid point.
If Gonzo walks in, because I play with Gonzo, if he walks in, I don't think you guys recognize him, do you?
He's got to be wearing a Diamondback hat or something. Right. And the other thing, the thing about baseball players and like, look, when a guy, I always say this, like, you know, when they have those ESPY awards and they have all these big brothers coming in and they're just, I mean, 6'8", like, who knows who the security guard is and who knows who the starting weak side tackle for the Bengals is. Like, I mean, you just don't, the guy's wearing a helmet. Like, you just don't, you wouldn't
right,
know
with his name
it
on the back.
Ball players, baseball players look like civilians.
Yeah, but they look like themselves, too.
Yeah, I know, but they also look like civilians.
Yeah,
so you don't
it.
See a guy. There's no context here. It's not like your show is called Dodger Sports Legends with Dr. Drew Pinsky. Right. It's just a show where you sit around and talk about boring psychological stuff.
That's right.
Right. So, A, there's no context. Like, if I saw Tommy Lasorda walk out first,
maybe
I would start to tune 50, in. 50, I'd start 50, to 50. Tune in a little bit.
Yeah, yeah.
But anyway, yes, I yelled at Drew for putting me in that
what
horrible.
What did you say exactly?
I said... Oh, I didn't know his name, but I said,
Step aside.
Sorry, this has nothing to do with you. Tune this out for a second. And then I proceeded to scream at Drew, what the fuck are you doing? Why are you putting him in this position? Why would I? But
how would you think I would know this guy?
And then
Sean's sitting there uncomfortably.
No offense, this guy. No offense, this guy. It has nothing to do with you. It's the same thing I told. I had this great moment when I did Dancing with the Stars where they told the story before, but I was doing this Zorro routine where I was coming out on a unicycle, right? And I had this sort of 26-year-old blonde chick from, like, Florida who's, like, your little segment producer. They follow her and the camera person. They follow you all through your practice and all that kind of stuff. And they edit everything. And then they do those things where they kind of pull you aside. And they go, oh, I said, what do you think about Julianne Hough? She's been a little tough on you today. And then you're supposed to stand there and go, well, she's tough, but we're coming back, you know, and whatever. And they show you practicing and everything. Well, at a certain point, and maybe we can even find the Dancing with the Stars thing. I don't know. But what you got to find is you have to find the opening is what you have to find.
That's, when you come out on the unicycle?
Yeah. They said, all right, now let's get some shots of you on the unicycle. And I said, I don't want shots of me on the unicycle because you're going to step on it. And she said, well, what are you talking about? And I said, well, for the opening, I'm going to do a big reveal where she's dancing alone out on the dance floor. And there's three or four beats of her dancing alone on the dance floor. And then I come out from the wings, from the dark wings on my unicycle with my Zorro cape. And she said, all right, well, let's just get some shots of you on that unicycle. And I said, listen, you understand, this is for the roll-in package. This is what's going on the big screen in front of the audience at home and the audience at the theater moments before I come out. So let's not step on it. Let's not reveal.
The surprise.
The surprise. Yeah. I'm going out. So it's Julianne Hough. She's dancing alone. She's doing her thing. Where's Adam? Big music cue. Here he comes on his unicycle.
Yeah.
So she said, I think people would be interested in seeing you.
Oh,
I said, listen, sweetie. Believe me, I know what I'm talking about. I've done a ton of this kind of stuff. I understand how the structure of it. And if you show me practicing on my unicycle, by the way, I can't believe we're having this conversation for this period of time, but if you show me practicing on the unicycle, then you're going to step on the reveal moments later of me coming out on the unicycle. All right, so nothing on the unicycle. All right, I think we have her. You can
watch.
Enjoy a couple beats, and you can just see when I start yelling, you'll see what I'm talking about.
Adam Carolla and his partner Julianne Hough.
And please stop it before we get to any dancing. So it's a good, I don't know, 6-8 seconds of her going solo. And then big reveal for me in the dark, swinging around. By the way.
What?
The Zorro mask does not help sword fighting or unicycle riding. All right, you can stop it. This whole thing of I'm going to engage in sword play but ruin all my peripheral vision, it seems like the world's worst plan ever. Can you imagine batting with a Zorro mask on?
Not at all, yeah.
Imagine the threat of being stabbed now, and you've cut down your peripheral vision 85%. You really can't see anything. So I said to her, no, no, and no. And then 2 days later, they're doing the sit-down testimonials at my house. And the sit-down testimonials.
After the dance? No.
No, still before the dance.
Now, yeah.
So they sit down, they do the testimonials. I go, so what dance are you doing? And how do you think your chances are? Blah, blah, blah. And then she goes, she's off camera, sound guy, camera guy, set up at my house. tell me about the unicycle. And I said, well, hold on. Is this? I was a little confused with the order things. Is this go after the dance or before the dance? No, this is part of the roll-in package for before the dance. I said, well, I don't want to talk about the unicycle if this is the roll-in package before the dance. Well, it's a good minute and a half before the dance. I mean, I said, first off, we've gone over this. And secondly, it's just not – I don't want to talk about it. I want to show it. I want to reveal it. She said, I think people will be interested in hearing about
Jesus.
It. I said, listen. I don't want to talk about it anymore. Trust me, I know what I'm doing. It's going to ruin the reveal. Move on. Ask whatever questions that don't have to do with the unicycle. And she said, well, I guess we'll just agree to disagree. And I said, hold on. Sound guy, camera guy, you're going to think I'm a huge dick for what I'm about to say.
We're ending this interview, right?
But, no. But she's been asking for this for a while. And now she must receive it. So go ahead and pull your earphones off because it's going to get loud, sound guy. And I say, hey, bitch, you don't know what the fuck you're talking about. You're fucking incompetent. You're annoying. You're way past your pay grade on this. And I don't want to do another lap around the retard park with you. You're a fucking idiot. You have no idea how to produce. And this is the 15th time you've broached this fucking subject. I was nice. Even kind, the first three or four times you fucking brought it up. But if you want to choose to keep going down this path, now I must get rude. You're forcing me to do this. Is this some star trip I'm on? Absolutely not. If I was on the construction site and a fucking guy who was a hack carpenter kept arguing with me about what the bevel should be on the strike side and the butt side, and he was way wrong when we were hanging a door, this would be the tone I would be using to that fucking glorified goomper. You don't know what the fuck you're doing. Shut the fuck up. And if you bring up the fucking unicycle again, I'll walk the fuck out of this interview. So shut up. And no, we're not agreeing to disagree. I'm right. I'm not 90% right. I'm not 96% right. I'm fucking 100% right. Now shut up. You don't know shit.
And what happened?
She cried. Shut up. And we moved on.
Adam's an asshole.
Did you get voted off that week, or is it
next week? Next week.
She went back with, "Oh, Adam's an asshole. I can't believe that guy."
No, I was doing her a service.
I know you look at it that way.
I really do.
Yep.
She's has a lifetime of arguing with people that know more than her, and she had no fucking business.
How much do you figure she changed after that little interaction?
Here's my point with how much people change after the interaction. I'm an emergency doctor. Gangbanger comes in with a bullet in him. My job, take it out.
Okay.
Not to figure out what they're going to do all after right, I take right. the bullet out.
All right. Well, all right. You're doing him a favor by getting through that.
I do my job. Right. Hopefully they find counseling in Jesus Christ the second they walk out of the door, or they pick up a gun and start shooting again. I've done my job as a surgeon.
Sean, did you go to opening day?
No, good transition. No, I actually hated opening day.
It looked
day.
Like a really cool opening day, though, for the Dodgers.
Yeah.
It's a new era for them, no?
It is. Yeah. No, I'm happy for the organization. But for me, opening day was just always a circus. It's like the last thing that was important was the actual game. So I'd rather day two when there's 30,000 people instead of 52,000 people and flybys and you got, all these celebrities doing different things. It was too much.
How about the Tesla S, by the way, which is – maybe Drew's next car.
Oh, I'd love that.
I need to start getting some commission because I probably sold 10 of them just
driving it around.
Just telling people I love it. I'm not like you. You're a car guy. I'm not a car guy. My old car was the Lexus LS. My wife called the Jew Canoe. So affectionately, she loves the. She married into the Jewish joke, so she
but
does that.
The work the to me as I say all the time, not the money hassle at the gas station, like the literal part where. I've had it happen many times, Drew. I know you've probably done this. Sean, you've probably done this as well, where you have that thing where it's like, I'll give you an example. I had to do the race training on Thursday. That was out in the high desert. It's way out, Willow Springs. It's 100 miles away. Do a show Wednesday night in Hollywood. Look down at the gauge. I have 14 miles left on thing. Now I have a choice. I can go to a gas station that night on the way home from doing the live show or just go, fuck it, I'll do it the next morning. But I'm leaving at 6:30 in the morning, and who the fuck wants to go fill up, then drive 2 hours? But could have plugged it in that night and just had that. And it's not the, oh, Christ, it costs $67. It's the, oh, shit, I don't want to go somewhere at 6:30 in the morning and fill this thing up.
Yeah, and that's the best part. It drives great. I've had zero issues with it. The only issues I've had were unrelated to the car. One, when I was in spring training, these can get you on rants as well. When I was in spring training, my wife took it, parked in a parking lot. Someone backed into it, didn't leave a note.
Shocking. Nice.
Shocking. Yeah. Yeah. So the whole lift gate was dented. It was kind of a mess. Probably a truck or an SUV. And then the other issue I had, shocking, is I'm still waiting for the DMV to send me my carpooling stickers, which is another perk.
Yeah.
5 months later.
Here's the thing about the DMV. They're very efficient when they want your money.
It's $8. So I don't think they're too worried about it.
I know.
That's the point. They're not paying enough.
When it comes, when it comes to them doing things, they're actually the government is just basically the people minus incentive. I've said it a million times. This is what you get when you don't have competition. The government doesn't really have competition. The DMV doesn't have some other Department of Motor Vehicles nipping at their heels, so thus
with better service,
they're super lethargic about everything, and they do a lot of like, hey, just send it out, now you can come pick it up, and you're like, just drop it in the mail, would you? No, you come pick it up. Like, they'll do a lot of that. They're not going to burn, they'll burn a million of your calories versus two of theirs. That's their— I had the DMV screw up once where they screwed up, they admitted they screwed up, and I said, no, just send me my license. They said, no, come pick it up. And I'm like, yeah, you guys screwed up. No, not so much.
And there's no recourse. That's the other thing.
It's Sean, you're doing well for yourself, I'm assuming. I'm also assuming you look like you're in fantastic shape. Baseball is one of those games you can play till you're 45 if you have to. Did you retire earlier than you wanted to?
You know, I retired. I was turning 35, and I had maybe 6 or 7 opportunities on the East Coast. I retired with the Mets, and it was I loved playing in New York, but I'm from California, and I have a 10-year-old and a 7-year-old, 2 daughters, and it was getting to the point where it's just hard to be away. I mean, it's 162 games in 181 days. So basically, and that's not counting 30 spring training games and 6 weeks there. So, you know, you're basically playing every day, 3 days off a month, and when you're not playing, if you're on the West Coast, you're normally flying to the East Coast. So you don't have a lot of downtime.
Right.
And I just got to the point where, you know, my numbers were starting to fade like someone who wasn't juiced up. You know, those guys hit 40 and they're still cranking like they're 25.
Right.
So mine were starting to fade a little bit, and my roles probably would have been more, you know, less of a, you know, 3 or 4 hitter and more of a, you know, 6-7 hitter that platoons, plays part-time. So, you know, I was just kind of burned out. Looking back, I probably should have played a couple more years.
Well, I mean, just to sock away the money, but you would have missed some good formative years with the kids, right?
Yeah, and I would have missed that. And, you know, once my older daughter started kindergarten, then it's like, okay, we wouldn't want to pull them out of school and move them around. So it got to the point where it's like, okay, you know, they're going to be here. And then you go 3 or 4 months without really seeing them more than a week at a time.
Mm.
And, you know, that was, you know, as you have two young kids. So
what got me thrown off my Dodger All-Star team with you, Drew, was me telling the head of show business that I don't platoon. And he punished me by not giving me any time to play.
Then you called him an asshole.
Well, I told him he was an asshole, and then
this is the Hollywood Stars?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh,
this
big fight.
Got me thrown off the
legendary fight.
The team. I got to hang out with Gonzo a little bit.
Right. He came over to our side. They kicked him out of the dugout area.
I have to be the only guy who's actually been thrown off of his Hollywood All-Star team, traded mid-game.
I have a good Hollywood Star. I don't know if you guys were there for this game, but it was, okay, Billy Crystal was playing third. Esai Morales was playing second.
Drew's favorite.
And Tony Danza was pitching.
Actor vest. So Esai Morales, right?
So the game's about to start. They haven't even thrown the first pitch. So Danza's really into it.
Sure.
Billy Crystal's into it. And so Esai Morales, I don't think he's ever played baseball. So they're throwing the ball around the horn. It always goes to the third baseman who gets to the pitcher.
Right.
So Tony Danza's kind of spun around facing the third baseman, facing Billy Crystal. Uh-oh. Esai Morales gets the ball, fires it in, hits Tony Danza. Were you guys there for that?
I don't remember that.
Hits him in the eye, cuts open his eye.
Ugh. Wow.
I think he had to get maybe some stitches. And he's that motherfucker. And he starts going after him. So Billy Crystal's breaking up Esai Morales and Tony Danza. Tony Danza's in there getting stitched up or whatever with the trainers. And then some other guy broke his leg sliding in. I mean, it was Like, we're trying to get ready for a game. We got all these actors in there on the tables laid out.
Funny.
Yeah. I grew up out here. Like, where'd you grow up, Sean?
I lived in San Jose till I was 12 and then Tustin. So
for me, it was really exciting to play in Dodger Stadium growing up out here. It was just cool to be out. I never went to any Dodger games. I just see them on TV and stuff like that. But it was still cool to be out there. And then I showed up early to take BP, and I was all fired up. That's when they're playing hardball and everything. And then when I realized my coach wasn't going to play me at all, I was like, I was basically crestfallen. Because I realized I have a look of incompetence. This is something I'd like to study very closely. I have a look of incompetence, and I'm not sure. Could figure. I'm going to work on.
We also don't look that as athletic as you are,
but that could be a weapon. You know.
Yeah. Oh no, I beat people up all the time. Yeah, it's great, but it's not good when you're trying to get into an all-star game and there's 20 people on your team, and your coach looks at you and then looks at Elaine Boozler and goes, "I'm going to start you over Carolla," which is basically what happened, and I said to my coach, I said, look, you know, you don't know me, I don't know you, but I used to play ball in high school, and I can play. And I know you want to win, because my guy really wanted to win. I know you want to win, and that's good, because I can swing the bat. And he was like, you don't tell me what to do. You sit the fuck down. And nobody tells me what to do. And I was like, I'm not telling you what to do. I'm just telling you, I know you don't know me, but I know you want to win. And I know I don't look any different than any of these other people on this bench, but I can help.
Isn't that just one game he's managing? Or is it
just one game.
And he's
just
one game. Taking it serious.
Wow. He's taking it really serious.
Gary Marshall is his opposing manager.
I wish I had him. No, he took it more seriously, I think, because it's just the one game of the year. And then when I sat down in between two guys, and I said, I ain't getting into this game. And he said, yeah. They went, ah, come on. And after about the third inning, he would walk over. He'd look at me. He'd look at the guy on my right and go, you going to right field next inning. And then he'd look at me again. He'd look at the guy to my left on the bench. He'd go, you go to center field. And he'd look at me again. He'd walk back to the thing. And I was like, why am I being punished? I really just told him that I was a good player. And I know he didn't know me and everything. And he was like, fuck you.
And did you guys win?
Well, we got to the end of the game. Because you guys had to come out and play, and it was one of those things where it's just going to end at noon. And it was one of the Baldwin, like Stephen Baldwin or something. And I swear it was Issei Morales who took his place. But Stephen Baldwin, it was his time to hit, and he'd already hit. And I was like, I'm looking at the scoreboard clock. There's 11 minutes left in this game. So he's like, Baldwin, where are you? Baldwin's like, you know, banging someone in the bathroom in the clubhouse or something. Like, Baldwin's not around, so I just grab a bat because, you know, you didn't have to hit out. You could hit out of order or whatever. I just grab a bat and I go run up. I go, Baldwin's not around. And he looks at me and he goes, you sit down. And I said, Baldwin's already hit. I've been here since 7:30 this morning. Let me have a time at the plate. Now, you sit down. Morales, you go up there. And I was like, so I sat down. Morales trickles one back to the pitcher. The pitcher like underhands it to the first baseman, and I yell, "Hey, coach! Nice call. Way to get us out of the inning." And he comes running over to me because he's the king of show business, and he hasn't been told to fuck off in a million years. He just runs up to me. He's like, "Are you fucking nuts?" And I said, "Fuck you!" And he said, "Fuck me!" Like, it's a weird thing. It's an interesting phenomenon. Guys who haven't been told to fuck off in like 30 years.
Are shocked.
They have a look of confusion.
Yeah, I've seen that look.
Like, he was like, what? And he said, are you, what? You know, what'd you say? And I said, I'll beat your ass right now. I'll bury you right here, right now. I'll fucking beat you. I'll kick your ass, fucking old man. You want to fuck with me? Pipe up. I'll beat the shit out of you. And he's like, fuck you. And I said, fuck you. You want to fucking throw down? I'll fucking throw down right now. I'll beat the shit out of you right now. It'll take about two punches right in the fucking old face. And he's like, he still remembers this, by the way, because somebody around here works with him and he tells, but I've been calling the guy a fucking asshole my whole career, and fuck him. Need that asshole. So anyway, that's when I got traded.
You get told to get out.
It's very similar to my my story in Toronto when I was having trouble with the manager. Kind of the same deal.
Really?
And the manager, who was a winning manager, who'd won the World Series when?
92, 93, both years.
Right. Not been told to fuck off in 1,000 years, right?
Well, I didn't. I was scared. I didn't tell him to fuck. I've never been in a fight in my life, and he probably would have thrown down with me. But he called me in one time and told me, basically, he's like, you know, hey, because I went to the GM and said, hey, I want to get traded. This guy doesn't like me. And he's like, well, give me a little time. I'm on the bench at this point. After, you know, having 2 good years, my first couple years. And so the manager calls me, you know, I like you. His name's Cito Gaston. Basically, but I don't think anyone would like the way you play defense. Your feet are too big. You can't steal bases. And you're never going to, you know, hit home runs until you start pulling the ball. So basically, he's like, I like you, but basically I hate you.
Right, right.
And so I had to deal with that. But
It is. It's like it is. It's right up there with when you ask somebody, can you help me move? And they go, I'd love to help you move, but it never ends up with them helping you move. The book, again, we'll take a couple of phone calls in here. The Way of Baseball, Finding Stillness at 95 Miles Per Hour, Sean Green. I'll tell you what, Drew.
Yeah, read this.
It's your turn, baby.
You got
Give
it.
A little.
No, go.
Don't
to,
read it. Feel it, baby.
I'll feel it, baby. Because feel I love it. These guys. It's Go to Meeting. You seen their television ads? They're really good.
Yeah,
and it actually bothers me a little bit because it does. The television ads don't fully flush out what Go to Meeting does, because not only do you get the 4 images or however many images you want of the people in the meeting in immediate face to face interaction. But you can work on documents together.
Yeah.
You can throw up your document. They can add to your document. You can add to their document. You can meld. It's really good shit.
No, just did this with a sponsor, and it was like, it's this thing of, you know, you can do the thing where they go, hey, we got a new potential sponsor. Could you come down to the warehouse and meet these guys and hang out with them? But the go to meeting, meet the sponsor, that's just,
cool.
I wasn't even wearing pants. I put a sweater on with no pants because they only see me from the chest up. And I just sat down at my computer.
I don't want to know.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay. So go to meeting with HD Faces by Citrix makes it easy to get your entire team together. You can share the screen, as I said, built-in HD video conferencing. It's like being in the same room. It's the audio is clear. The images are clear, and they're in real time. You can launch or join meetings from computer, smartphone, tablet, even the iPad. Start hosting face-to-face online meetings today with GoToMeeting free for 30 days. Visit GoToMeeting.com and try it free. Hit the try it free button and use the promo code Adam.
All right. Do you see a call you like up there? Sean, anything jumping out at you? Sean, I'm guessing you saved your money and you're doing quite nicely for yourself at this stage in your life?
I think so, yeah. I mean, it's scary when it's, you know, in the market. Like I retired after 07, all of a sudden 08, you know, everything crashes.
Right.
I'm like, geez,
right.
Good timing with that. But, you know, I relying on smarter people than me to handle that stuff. So.
Yes, that's what I do. All right, Drew, you want to...
I do. I want to talk to Mason.
All right, so we'll take a break. What's so much...
Mason's using Adderall and Vyvanse for studying. It's interesting.
And you want to know if there's any negative effects there. Yeah. We'll talk to 19-year-old Mason from Dallas right after this.
Hi, I'm Larry Miller, but in a way, aren't we all? And this week, on This Week with Larry Miller, we took the start of baseball season, April Fool's Day, and a couple other things, and decided that today was the day for me to read Casey at the Bat as the Poetry Corner. It really helped me, and I hope it helps you. We'll see you here.
Back with Dodger great Sean Green and Mason on line 2. That's who we promised we'd talk to. Mason?
How's it going, Adam? Dr.
Good.
Drew?
Calling
to talk to you best.
Good. What's going on?
Oh, not a whole lot. I just had a question about using Adderall and Vyvanse for studying. I know it's getting more and more popular and everything. I just read some new study that like 1 in 5 teenage boys is diagnosed with ADHD.
Wow.
And I was wondering if there's any negative effects or if, Drew, you've had any experience with, like, your sons using it or whatnot.
I don't.
What's the Vyvanse?
Vyvanse and Adderall are both psychostimulants. Vyvanse is sort of these are all related to amphetamine.
True. The 1 in 5
I know.
With ADHD
right.
is like the 2 out of every 2.5 American women will be raped in their lifetime, kind of thing. We're just like, what? I think we're changing the definition of rape more than they're being raped more.
Right. Same thing with ADD, ADHD. I'm now officially saying if it's 1 in 5, it's grotesquely overdone. grotesquely. I've always said that if it's properly diagnosed at the right age with psychometric testing and whatnot, okay, the medicines work up to the age of 18. After 18, I'm not so sure. But properly selected, it's probably 1% of the population, not 1 out of 5.
Well, how's our fucking flora and fauna changed that much in the last 10 years?
Yeah,
listen,
please,
I'm holding a calendar. I'm going there. I'm holding a calendar up right now. What's that a picture of?
Oh, Jesus. That's a kid with a helmet on to shape its head.
Corrective helmet. Who's better looking than my son?
Nobody.
Who's better looking than my boy, Sonny?
Who wears a cap better than your son now, too?
Cap, sunglasses.
He's always with that cap,
ascot.
Man.
Find me a picture of my boy. And I was told by the doctors that his sunglasses or his glasses may not sit correctly on his head. I said, this is
insane.
Fucking charlatans. This is bullshit. Yeah. There's no way that every other. And then Joel McHale told me, oh, his kid had it. And I was like, and then everyone else starts saying, oh, my kid. And I was like, could the bones in your skull have changed this much since I was in junior high or grade school? No.
Yeah, they're going to look. They will one day look upon this as some sort of insane, like the way they looked at Chinese people wearing the tiny shoes.
Right.
It's going to be some sort of insane cultural thing.
Look at that boy.
Look at that. Oh, my God.
Look at
him. It's all fucked up.
Oh, he's grotesque. It's like that movie, The Mask.
Oh, my God.
Oh, those fucking assholes.
But, all right. So,
and I'm an animal because I told them all they were idiots.
Right. So the ADHD thing is overdone. Let's not even talk about that. Separate thing. Blah, blah, blah. But kids are using stimulants as performance-enhancing drugs on college particularly. I'm not going to tell you it doesn't work because you'll tell me I'm full of shit because it does.
Well, I don't know. I think it affects people different ways.
No. It's been shown over and over again. It can affect positively academic performance in a single exposure. See?
Oh, got to get some. What about the beta blockers?
Beta blockers are to prevent your body from reacting nervously. It's what I should be taking right now, but I should have taken it.
No,
Salt
but
Lake
like
City.
If me or Sean were hosting,
you would fucking fall over dead because you barely have a pulse, such as it is. Your pulse would go to 20. So you would not be a candidate.
Well, hold on a second.
For the beta blockers or for the
Adderall? Beta blockers.
If
the Adderall might give them a little something. Yeah, go ahead.
If I were taking that in the spirit in which it was intended, which was douche spirit, spirit of the douche, the beautifully scented
good
douche
for
wind.
For your next beverage.
Or my next fishing vessel.
There you go.
Spirit of the douche. Like. Sean, that's the next jock. Yeah. Super douchey when the football coach does the three-ring circus or something and he's won three Super Bowl rings or some bullshit like that. It's always some fucking bullshit about their rings or their cup or whatever.
Yeah,
it's
horrible.
Like, come on, douche. Just go fucking fishing, would you? Everyone else named their boat after their fat wife and you got to name after three fucking Super Bowl rings. Such a douchey move. All right, Drew.
Yeah, take.
I'm going to host the Oscars. Why not take a beta blocker?
You could. Then your pulse might be up to a reasonable level. You could go back to your usual 40.
Does it affect your thinking in any way?
It shouldn't. I though always worry about. I get affected by meds very easily, and so I always worry it would affect my thinking. In maybe
you ever
subtle
take
ways.
One?
No.
If someone is nervous and they want to do Letterman,
it's fine. Beta blockers are harmless.
Well,
harmless.
So
stops your heart rate from going up, stops your muscle tone from going up.
Well, I mean,
up.
It's like let's just say you get nervous, and you pit out.
It would reduce some of that.
You get sweaty under the pits.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Anyway, but the Adderall does affect performance. The problem is at what risk? And I'm telling you, Mason, I've seen so many shitty things from stimulant overuse. I do a lot of consulting at some of the universities here in Southern California. I've seen psychoses. I've seen manias. I've seen suicidality when they stop and no one realizes it's all from the damn stimulants
they're using
to take their chemistry test.
There's two sayings that I always quote Dr. Drew, and I think amongst his best.
Yeah.
Adam, you're a genius.
That's one.
And then Adam, you're a genius is the second one.
So you always quote that.
And then remember this guy?
Different canes.
Is that the other one?
Remember this guy. No, he says, no free lunches in nature.
Yeah.
I like that. I've always thought about that. There's just – you can start doing things where you come up with pesticides to get rid of a certain aphid. But then the other aphids will figure out – the ones that survive will figure out a way to flourish. And eventually the pesticide's not going to be effective. So no free lunches in nature and reality on reality's terms.
That's right. So both like those apply here, which is you're not going to be taking psychostimulants your whole life. Whatever your level of academic performance is your level. Work harder. Do better. So when you get in the world, you won't have cheated yourself and be only able to perform at a certain level if you take a stimulant. And by the way, taking those stimulants, you're only exposing yourself to harm. there will be a price.
Well,
maybe
also
a little one, maybe a big one. I don't know.
Sean, as a jock, you'll know this. I mean, the sort of thing where you put a nice tailwind on your ship all the time doesn't build a lot of muscle,
right.
And it doesn't build
right.
It doesn't build a lot of strength in the crew. It's sort of nice to run into the wind
a
little bit. And this notion, like I like to quote, which is one of my favorite quotes from me.
Adam's a genius.
Adam's a genius. No, but I think about it. Astronauts go to the space station and they immediately start losing muscle mass and bone density and stuff because there's no resistance. They need resistance. And it's a big issue. If you're going to be up there for 4 months, they have to devise all sorts of things where you create resistance because otherwise you're just floating and you're losing resistance and you're losing – your body starts to atrophy. So in life, we try to avoid resistance. We should be – challenging it and taking it on. Don't avoid it. That's what builds the muscle.
Yeah, right. So there you go. That's the free
lunch. Like, let's hollow out the dumbbells.
Yeah.
So we can do more reps. Like, no, that's not a good plan.
No, I think it's the same in sports, as you're saying. When, you know, if you're facing, as a hitter, you're facing tougher pitchers, it kind of keeps you in check. Because if you're facing crappy pitchers all the time, then you get in bad habits because you're trying to swing for the fences and do this and that. And then you face a really tough guy and it kind of brings you back to earth.
Let's talk to Luke. Luke.
Hey there.
Hey there. Hey. What's going on, Luke?
Oh, I'm just enjoying a nice sunny day out here in Montana.
Nice. What's going on?
Well, I wanted to see if you guys had any opinions about... I got a girlfriend. I've been dating her for about 6-7 months now, and she's pretty adamant about whenever she gets married, she wants to keep her last name.
Does she have a good last name? Because that would factor in.
Yeah, it's Whisker Butt. No, it's Miller. But still, the whole thing is traditional.
Hold on a second. Here's my feeling. I don't know. First off, when it comes to marriage, it's, chick with the dress, chick picking out the dresses for the bridesmaids, floral arrangements, blah, blah, blah. It's all tipped the direction of the chick. This is really the last thing we have, is we don't have to do this fucking hyphenated bullshit. But I make exceptions for, you know, if I marry Jennifer Lopez, she gets to keep Lopez because she's earned Lopez and she's built Lopez and she's made it into a brand.
It's a brand, right.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Well, so what happens to the kids also, Luke? Does she have any feelings about what the kids' last names need to be?
Or if she has a cool last name like Laser Ice Blade.
Ooh.
You know what I mean? Like Sheila Laser Ice Blade.
But what about the kids?
Well, we haven't really spoke about that, but that's a great point, Drew. I don't...
Because I understand are 3 generations, 4 generations down the line, people are going to have 7 hyphenated names at the end of their name.
Oh, so, because the kids have 2. I mean, you have 2 going into the thing, and then you're going to keep your 2, and you're going to marry someone who had 2. And
you can have 12 hyphenated names eventually.
I think there's 2.
Very, very quickly.
I think there's 2 arguments. Yeah. One is the J-Lo argument, if you're marrying someone that has a brand. And I think the other, and you know, I have a cousin who did it, which we kind of call him a pussy for doing it. But
sure.
Like I have 2 daughters, I have a sister, so the green name's gone. So maybe for some, you know, family reason, they want to keep the name. So maybe it's
A grandpa or uncle or whoever hit 4 dingers in 1 game back in 2002. That's no, I'm honest. I mean, honest. Like, hey, if your last name is Coors, not Miller. As the last name Miller Light. Right. No, but seriously, like, if you got a name, you know, Anheuser-Busch or Bush or Anheuser or something, or Sears or Roebuck, whatever, like somebody worked, struggled, earned, and, it, you know, you're a Kennedy or a Carnegie or a Carnegie or whatever they're pronouncing it this week on KCRW, that's something else. That's something that's a factor because, hey, your last name's Kennedy.
Yeah.
And that not only is going to open a couple doors for your kid, that's going to be helpful on the college application.
I actually admire what my wife did. She gave her middle name to my daughter as a middle name, and she kept her last name as a middle name. And then my name, last name, became her last name.
Mm-hmm.
That makes sense to me.
Yeah, so that's confusing and narcissistic.
No, but isn't that reasonable?
Yeah. However it shakes out that she took the good name of Pinsky and
tacked it on. It's a pretty good name. I'm sure she didn't like welcome that, but she kept hers and kept that identity and offered a piece of it over to my daughter.
Luke,
it was good.
You know what I think the deal should be for all this and everyone who argues about this? Here's the deal. Your last name is what?
Miller.
Oh, you're Miller. Wait a minute. I thought she was Miller.
No. She's Stevenson.
Oh, okay. Miller Stevenson.
Stevenson
like
Miller.
A decent law firm. Here's what I would say. I would say this. How about this? We're going with the Mono last name, which is my last name. We'll do that. But I'll tell you what. If I don't have some degree of success in something, business, if I don't invent something, if I don't get my name on a sign in front of a store, if I don't, you give me 10 years to get my shit together, again, become a partner in a law firm, something, then we'll go back to the hyphenated
thing. Or just make it a full competition where whoever has a better career for 10 years gets the name.
I like that. We like the meritocracy, right? We like the competition. That would be a really cool thing to do.
Yes.
You guys would be fighting constantly. But it would force both couples, both of them, to kind of bust their butt in education and try to climb that career ladder and so on and so forth. All right. Should we do one more call here, Drewski?
Yeah.
Let's talk to Jonathan, 28, from Ohio. Jonathan?
Hey, how's it going, guys?
Good. How you doing?
Good. Big fan of both of you, and thanks for everything you guys do.
Thanks.
Yeah, I just wanted to call and get you guys' opinion on a situation I have regarding the relationship with my mom. She is just kind of a crazy person, and everything came to a head a couple months ago, and we kind of exchanged some emails and some frank talk. And during that time, I think she was sexually abused by her dad.
Okay.
And she obviously hasn't sought the proper treatment, and I don't know. I just wanted to get your guys' thoughts on whether you think I should kind of like push her to get more treatment or just accept her for how she is.
All right. So basically you're asking how to deal with an adult family member with severe mental health issues that doesn't acknowledge it and doesn't want treatment.
How old is she?
She is 55.
Yeah. And and she's, you know, she's late in life.
She's young.
Later in life.
So I mean, my mother-in-law had the dignity to just die.
Yeah.
And she was nuts.
Yeah, yeah.
But I mean, I can tell you, I was there when the cops were summoned, and I basically pulled her aside, and I just said, Helen, you can either get into the ambulance and go to the hospital and be checked out by people who care, or the LAPD is going to show up, and they're forcibly take you.
Yeah.
They will be,
that's it.
They will, like, put zip ties on you, and they will drag you.
So
and she
on.
Said, go get them.
Yeah.
So they fought in the living room.
Yeah, yeah. So that's what you do in a crisis. When she gets dangerous and crazy and disconnected from reality, you do exactly what Adam did. You go, we're going this way or this way, but we're not continuing the status quo. So
I, by the way, I know you're nuts. I know everyone's nuts, but I am incredibly surprised by the number of people where I go, then here's how this is going to play out. We're going to call the cops.
Yeah.
We're going to sit here and wait. By the way, it's fucking Friday night.
Yeah.
I work every day of the fucking week. Fucking sit here Friday night in Reseda. So we're going to fucking sit on your shitty sofa with the plastic on it and swamp cooler above it. And we're going to wait for the cops. And then when the cops show up, they're going to physically restrain you and they're going to push you into the back of that. Now, that's what's going to happen.
Yeah.
You get in now or I pick up this phone. And she goes, give them a call. And then the cops show up. And now the cops are here. And I go, now you have a second choice. You can walk and get into the back of that ambulance, or they can physically restrain you and pull you in. And she said, come get me. And she fought him.
Yeah. Well, that's
awesome.
Crazy.
That's I guess that's part of being crazy.
That's part of being crazy.
Yes.
And, and they're entitled to it. Who are you to say? Who are you to say? So,
so, I mean, Drew, do you think it's even worth it to try and kind of like, I've got a couple of siblings and my dad, and we all kind of know that she's got problems.
Yes,
get together. Worth it to try and like rally support.
Yes,
and try
keep a unified front. Don't let anybody back off the you need treatment. You need treatment. We'll take you. We'll help you. We'll support you. Everyone must be given an absolute unified, simple message. Don't get into he said or she said or it's because of. I hear you. You're suffering. We can get you help. Just do not engage.
Yes.
Dude, this is Adam's new this is Adam's new
mantra. Don't engage.
Did you hear the engage story, Gary? Just Chris? Don't engage. Yeah, okay, good.
Yeah, don't engage.
Don't engage, but do support and show a unified show of force in front. And use whatever leverage you have. If you are supporting her in any way, threaten to withdraw that support if we don't do something more proactive. So whatever leverage you got, but ultimately you're not responsible, and that's hard to deal with.
Do you know how crazy mother-in-law's story ended?
Yours?
Mm-hmm.
I remember her.
It was a great fighting moment.
Yeah.
No, no. Well, no. She fought. She kicked. She screamed. She broke one of the cop's watches. Tore his watch off. Oh, she was like a fifth degree black belt.
Yeah. For real?
Yeah. For real. She was in crazy shape at age like 70. It's not an ounce of body fat. I worked out at the gym all the time, but she was going nuts.
I'm picturing the Terminator girl. Doing push-ups.
She had some of that, and she was throwing spinning heel kicks at the cops, and they're wrestling with her, fighting her. She's full blood Italian. She's screaming at the top of her lungs. You know, it was the worst. This is the worst, like 40 minutes of my life.
Was she speaking in tongues and stuff, that kind of thing?
No, she was screaming at my wife. Why did you do this to me?
Oh.
Which then turned my wife into a heap. Which then, and all I could think of is, it's fucking Friday night. It's Friday night. That's what I'm doing Friday night. So
very compassionate.
Smash got to about 2 years later, and she would go off on these things where she'd check into a hotel and sit and buy a meal for Jesus and one for her, and then sit there and eat alone at a hotel
with Jesus.
Up the street, you know, kind of thing. But she wouldn't take her meds, she wouldn't do anything. And then we didn't hear from her for a couple of days. And my wife said, I think she may be out, you know, buying dinner for Jesus. She may be out somewhere doing nuts. She's nuts, you know, she lived alone. She wouldn't move into an apartment. We couldn't move her into a condo. You know, I was trying. She was no. So she said, it was dinner time at my house. And my wife said, I'm going to call my neighbor, Jim. I'm going to give him to go over there and check up on her. Because I haven't heard from her in like 3 days. I'm worried.
Something's not right.
So what'd I say?
Is it Friday night?
This is probably Wednesday. I go, leave Jim alone. Leave Jim alone. Oh, he's going to go over there. Your mom's going to be watching TV. He's, you know, leave Jim alone. She hasn't picked up the phone in a couple days or whatever. She does this all the time. Leave Jim alone. No, I'm worried. So she's like dialing Jim. He's like, Jim. And I'm like, it's not the guy who fucking finishes dinner. You know, could you go over there and see what's going? Yeah, I'll stay on the phone with you. Could you go over there and see what's, I'm worried about mom. Why don't the poor guy relax over there? So she's like, he goes over there. Here's a conversation I have I'm standing next to my wife the whole time, just shaking my head. Let the guy be. Yeah. Oh, okay. So you open a window. You're coming. You're going inside. Okay. Thank you, Jim. I appreciate that. She's okay. I'm going, leave her alone. Leave the guy alone. Leave the guy alone. Let the guy fucking go back to. She's dead. That's how the conversation. She's dead. Okay. Thank. Yeah, I'll call them. Thanks, Jim. Hang on, plumbing. I had to do the. I was like, I've never been stymied. Like, I do the. God, leave now. She's fine. She's fucking watching Jeopardy right now, laughing. She's eating a TV dinner. Literally, she's dead. He went over there. This guy, literally opened a window. She'd lay down to take a nap before her workout. She'd work out like 2 hours a day. She'd lay down to take a nap on the entryway cot, whatever. And she just
gone.
Just died.
Wow.
Yep.
That's the way to go.
It is for all parties, except for Jim, who had to go find a dead person.
But he was mellow. Like, no, he wasn't.
He wasn't screaming. Well, she didn't have a knife sticking in her or anything like that. He was like, he could tell that she'd been dead for probably a day or two. Yeah. And he said, your mom's dead. Yeah. But it was like mid me going, let the guy alone. She's probably at the Ramada Inn eating dinner with Jesus right now. And, oh, she's dead? I had to use one of my, it was the greatest use of my yeah, but still argument I ever had to trot out. All right. The great Sean Green. Love this guy. The Way of Baseball, Finding Stillness at 95 miles per hour. Available on Amazon, and you can click through our site, Adam and DrDrewShow.com. Show us a little love. And once again, if you would like to keep us afloat here, Drew is it's a doctor, man. This guy gets paid the buku bucks. Comes over here, kills a couple hours. You got to compensate the man, people. And you want to help out? You can donate by clicking on the PayPal button on our site. Also, me and Dr. Drew, Redondo Beach Performing Arts Center. Cool venue, Drew. Don't know if you've ever played that venue.
I saw an opera there once. Like a theater, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Big, cool theater. Yeah. I played there a few times. Really nice venue. So come on out and see us and get yourself a nice glass of the White Man Grea. All right. So until next time. And by the way, Sean's website, jocktalk.com, and you can Twitter him at SeanGreen15. Until next time, this is Adam Carolla for Sean Green and Dr. Drew saying mahalo.
This is Carolla Digital.